Hello and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. This is a podcast based on NYPD Blue episode season 9, episode 16, A Little Dad'll Do Ya. And a couple things before it starts, we're just talking about the episode in general. Spoiler alert, the best thing would be to watch the show. It's available on Hulu, Disney Plus if you are out of the States, and I think you can get it on Disney Plus with a premium account. It was on Tubi. I don't think it's there anymore. And sometimes it's on Amazon, sometimes it's not. I would suggest using Hulu or the DVDs if you can get them. But also important to say, this episode is only slightly edited. It's a little bit shorter, a little more free-flowing. Also, an important thing here, trigger warning, I think I say it during the episode too, for rape and specifically false rape allegations. Very serious topics here, and I don't want to upset anybody, but it happens in the episode. Anyway, that episode starts right now. Season 9, episode 16, A Little Dad'll Do Ya. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, talk about every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. And I would recommend you watch the episode before listening to this podcast, because we're not really recapping, we're just talking about it. This one kind of opens weirdly. It opens up with the case that Connie and Rita have, which is a rape where a fiance of kind of a roided out individual is freaking the fuck out inside this apartment because they're not going to get, was it Freddie Gallo?
Okay. The fact that you don't know his name is ridiculous.
Lenny Gano.
Lenny Gano.
Because he says it
the
like
guy says it like 95 times. That's what the name of the episode should be.
Lenny Gano.
Lenny Gano.
Yeah, that's how you say it. You wake up the dog, too. Yeah, see? That's how you say it.
Lenny Gano. Well, Lenny Gano is the gentleman's second cousin who comes over for football occasionally, but he supposedly walked in on him attempting to rape his fiance.
Football, baby.
And chased him out the door with his pants around his ass. They couldn't make it more clear that this guy is a loose cannon, violent problem.
Who is? The big man? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's no subtlety whatsoever to how this guy is acting.
He's upset. His fiance has been ultimately, like, you know, taken advantage of.
But he's also, like, yeah. But he's also, like, not listening to the cops. He's not even attempting to calm down. He's, like, banging shit on the I don't know. It seemed like from the very beginning they're like, this guy's gonna be a problem much more than just concerned about his fiance. Mm-hmm. I think like they don't really play it subtly.
I get that.
She tells a full story about how the guy came over because he said he left tools in their place. He then started pawing at her and then ripped her blouse and began to assault her. That's going to be very important later when we talk about what this case turns into.
You know, the sexy stuff.
So after that, we have, before the credits start or before the theme song starts, Clark goes to the youth facility that Killick is in. If you don't remember James Killick.
I don't remember.
He was...
mom was doing gross stuff to him.
And they took him to a clinic because he doesn't have any other family that could take him in.
Mm-hmm.
And that clinic was scary from day one. It looks like just a giant cage off of a...
hotel, basically.
Yeah, it's pretty...
Like a youth hotel.
When he goes to get, he tries to bring him magazines, he sees a giant black eye and he's like, what's happening to him? And the guy's like, if he doesn't tell me what's going on, how can I do anything?
Yeah. And then he also tells Clark, like, well, Clark says, here's the magazines. I brought some magazines for you. He's like, I'll keep them. They'll just steal them anyways. And then this is where I had then they pan over to like a group of like non-white kids.
Yeah. Very quick pan.
Yeah, and it's like it made me feel type of way a little bit because it's like this kid's been in the system like 2 days how long have those kids been in the system?
3 weeks.
Okay, this kid's been in the system 3 weeks. How long have those kids been in the system?
It's also...
You know, like, what are their circumstances, too? Like, I don't know.
It also has that thing where... When a kid says, I can't do anything about it because it'll get worse.
Yeah.
It's funny how adults don't remember that. You know what I mean? Like, it's a social truth that if he goes to the guy running the facility and says, by the way, so-and-so did this and so-and-so did this to me and so-and-so did this to me, that's only going to be bad for him.
Yeah, no.
Like, they always say, well, if you tell somebody, it'll stop. No, it won't. It'll get worse. Like, people, why is it that adults seem to, especially in movies and TV, they always seem to forget that that is an aspect of what's going on when you're a kid?
I kind of understand what you're saying.
Like, it's always like, no, especially in that situation, like, oh, he rats out on these kids and then they're just going to be cool with him? No.
I get that.
Come on.
I definitely get that for sure. Like, yeah. Yeah.
Like, what are you talking
about?
It's
prison-style rules, in a sense.
Kind of.
You can't really rat in prison. If you do, then you get that, like... It's like in The Wire. Randy was labeled a rat when he was at the youth facility when he ended up going into foster care. And it was hard for him, and he got beat up all the time in the beginning, and then he had it changed, and then at the end of the fifth season, it changed him.
Yeah, it's a different.
Yeah,
it's a whole thing about the culture.
It's a weird, like, prison rules aspect of it, of like, we're gonna do shitty things, and the only way for you to stop it is by standing up for yourself.
Yeah,
you
basically.
You can't tell on anybody. You have to physically hurt me. It's really weird.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, but...
It's very weird, like, thought process, but...
Yeah, Clark Jr. is basically like, hey, I tried to talk to your aunt. She says her apartment's too small,
yeah.
Which is a kind way of saying, your aunt doesn't give a fuck about you, which is sad. And then he said, your mom has been told she needs to have 24-hour care. And he's like, how long? He's like, until she's better. He's like, what, a week, a year? It's already been 3 weeks. And then it reminded me, he's like, remember how long 3 weeks used to be when you were a kid?
Used to feel, yeah.
Now I feel like 3 weeks is gone in an instant.
Yeah, it just felt like it was January.
And when you're a kid, like 3 weeks?
We're halfway through the year already.
Like my thought, like when I was watching, I think it was like South Park. It's like you're grounded for 2 weeks. And I was like, 2 fucking weeks. Who fucking cares? It's like two weeks means nothing.
2 weeks is so fast. There's so many things you can do, and yet if we're being grounded for 2 weeks.
So he basically leaves that facility feeling like shit because he put him in there. He's trying to find a way to help him, but nothing's working. And that's it. I believe after that is the credits. Also, a reminder, James Killick, played by famous face Josh Zuckerman, who was young Dr. Evil and Goldmember.
Claim to fame, baby.
When they come back from the break, the main case, they find a DOA... buried in her pajamas.
Well, and she's wearing regular clothes as well.
Yeah, she's pajamas
are
on
underneath, and she was killed by manual
strangulation.
Yeah, which he doesn't seem like a really nice guy.
They find that a child was reported missing, Wan Yi. So they bring in the parents. The parents are shaken up and distraught when they see a picture. It's also important to note that the mother does not speak English, but speaks Mandarin Chinese.
Cantonese?
Something.
I don't think Chinese is a language.
It isn't. It's Mandarin.
You're fucking racist.
Cantonese.
You speak American?
Well...
You do. You say the N-word a lot, so that's not
true at all. I even censor myself when I sing Kendrick.
But not when I'm talking to the lady at the bank.
They bring in the parent. They bring in the parents. The mom doesn't speak English, which I think is important because rewatching it, I think she like sees it and probably says to the husband, "They found the daughter we murdered."
Spoiler yeah, that's alert. What I would like to know. What was said? Like,
they found our daughter that we killed.
It'd be funny. It would be fun to find someone who can translate that. I bet you could probably translate it through your phone somehow. Like,
Google
Translate or something could catch it. But it would be interesting to see what they say to each other, because I like when you watch it with subtitles, they don't say anything.
It just says speaks
Mandarin, I think.
Yeah, it just speaking.
Yeah, I think it says Mandarin, or I think it might say Chinese.
It might say foreign language.
But it says they're just speaking to each other. It doesn't say what they're saying. Some shows will tell you, but yeah, that one.
And because the way they do it is they say like, oh, how long has she been missing? When did you last see her? Blah, 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 blah. And then he's like, I'm going to show you a photo. It's a photo of a girl that's dead. So prepare yourself. They show the photo. The mom starts crying, and she starts immediately talking.
Yeah.
And then the husband does like, and like he's like doing, because there's so much body language in what they're saying. It's almost like he's saying like, calm down, which you're like, you wouldn't say that to her. You would say like,
you would console her.
You would console her and then ask like, well, what happened?
Yeah.
He does like, oh, hold on. And then he asks them, who did this? And it was like, kind of weird on the second watch. They tell the detectives immediately, talk to Travis. She has a shitty boyfriend named Travis. Travis is a famous face.
Uh-oh.
Do you know who he is?
No, I did not know at all.
Travis, his name... Also, the father's a somewhat famous face. He's been in like... He has over 211 or to over 200 credits.
Yeah.
And he's just been in a little bit of everything, and you've seen his face before, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. He was great.
Travis is played by Jake Richardson. He is the kid buying weed in several Kevin Smith movies. Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, Clerks 2, Clerks 3. Jake Richardson was the kid in several View Askew movies with Jay and Silent Bob as the kid who buys weed.
That was unfortunate. I think we need to have a team meeting about what a famous face is.
He's been in multiple movies as the same character. Like, that's a pretty big deal if you're a fan of those movies. Also, a pretty big deal for him. He's got a steady thing going. He was in Clerks 3, which is the most recent one.
No, not 3.
Okay.
Was 3
good?
Hold on,
real quick. Oh, fuck you. Okay.
Famous faces like, you know, Pedro Pascal was playing a vampire.
We've gone over tons of people that you went like, oh, yeah, he's that guy. And it was like one person and one thing.
Yeah, but he was like, he wasn't the dude who just buys weed.
He doesn't have a character name, but he's in multiple movies.
Well, we'll bring it up in the next meeting.
We don't have meetings. It's obvious we don't have meetings.
That's the issue. I've been trying to have one. Do you check your email? I've been trying to have one for years.
What email?
Astro Brother podcast email.
Yeah, it goes to my phone.
I've been sending it to you.
Yeah, we only get ads for people that think I'm going to pay them money to grow this podcast. Hey, not gonna. Travis is essentially saying like, hey, Wan Yi, she's my girlfriend. We didn't have sex because she didn't want to. And they think it's a slam dunk with this Travis kid because he has priors for violent crime, and her bag was in his backpack. So they're like, he definitely killed her and buried her. He says like, wow, I didn't kill Wan Yi. What are you, crazy? Like, I can't kill anybody. He's like, well, what about the dude you stabbed? He's like, well, does it mention in that report that he had a knife and we stabbed each other? And they're like, oh, no, it doesn't. And then he said, what's with the bag in your backpack? And he's like, I have to carry it for her because her parents won't let her have makeup and also get pissed at her all the time. And he's like, well, who would have killed her? He's like, her family. They treat her like shit. They beat her ass. And they constantly tell her she should run away and die. And they're all like, what? And then he says something that I don't know if it's 100% true back then, but if it is true, that's kind of bananas. That in China, you can have two kids,
mm-hmm.
but they want boys.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a second daughter. They pushed her off onto an aunt
mm-hmm.
and then had a boy. But when they immigrated to the United States, China forced them.
That's what the story is. I don't know if that's true or not.
To take all of their kids. What the fuck are we doing?
But I know that at one point it was like if you were going to have two children in China, one of them had to be a boy. You couldn't have two girls.
I just thought it was you could only have two kids and nobody wants to have girls. That's what I thought.
Maybe culturally, that's what it is. I don't remember. I thought it was like you have to at least have one boy.
It also could be 100% propaganda filtered through like being American.
Sure.
But what's insane about it is this one piece of information makes all of them go, huh, maybe we should interview the family. Maybe this isn't a slam dunk. And they bring in the sister... freshman at where, Kyle?
St. John's, baby.
St. John's. What are they? The Redmen.
No, we're the Red Storm now.
Red Storm, because Redmen's racist.
Yeah. Well, you know, our old mascot was just a lifelike drawing of an Indian face. So, our Native American face with a feather and everything. So, it's pretty rad.
Freshman at St. John's. She comes in and is ice cold. Like, doesn't seem to care too much that her fucking sister's dead.
Yeah.
And then they said, well, how's the foam life? Happy. She's good. Like, we're getting reports that it wasn't good. And he's like, no, it's good. Look at Travis. It's all Travis. And then they said, we know that you didn't have a good relationship with Wanyi. Didn't you say to her that she should run away? And she's like, yeah, I did. It's true. And then they're like, what? She's 14. He's like, yeah, she's a stranger to us, and she sucks, and we don't like her.
Yeah, because she didn't live with them until she got forced to have to stay, you know? Yeah.
And it also was really awkward because it was like, yeah, she's just ruining everything. Now there's three kids to pay for. It's like, you're one of those fucking kids that are getting paid for. How are you not ruining everything by eating?
She was born first.
And she says, I'm sorry, I have a midterm in 3 hours. And then they're like, usually they'll let midterm slide if your sister died. And then she just was like, I just don't want to be here. That's like, that's the energy. Like, I just don't want to be here anymore.
I've got to go. She played a really good, like, person who was just didn't give a shit.
Yeah, she does a really good job.
About that being there. Like, she did not want to be there.
They find out that she had scars on her back that show
beating scars,
like length of abuse.
Yeah,
and so they tell that to Madeline and Jones, who are going to speak to the dad. And the reason I'm laughing is because this scene reminded me so much of the scene in It's Always Sunny when Charlie talks to the guy. Charlie and Mac talk to the guy who's working. He's like, keep working. They never stop working on Law and Order. I was like, because it's in a warehouse.
He's riding the forklift. He's moving. He's like, yeah.
He's moving all types of shit. And it was
constantly
just
constantly going, even though they're like trying to talk to him. He even says, like, I can't stop.
I gotta work.
Yeah.
So he says, look, here's the deal. I got to keep working. I have two jobs. And they said, your other job said you were late, 2 hours late the morning that she would have died. Why is that? He's like, yeah, I'm late to work because I have two jobs and I don't sleep.
It's kind of true.
Yeah, it was kind of like maybe
I believe him on that one.
They decide we got to talk to the mom with a translator.
Which is a ballsy move.
Also, this is probably not what the translator had in mind for today. Because the translator comes in and they're trying to do a interrogation with a translator, which is awkward because they want to gauge reactions, but they don't know what she's saying.
Yeah, that's true.
So Sipowicz is constantly like, yeah, you're supposed to keep up. You're supposed to keep up and let us know what's going on. And it was like, hold on, dude, shit. But it was like, look, we understand she was abused. We understand that she didn't have a happy life. You weren't happy with her. What happened to Wanye? And she says, it was my fault. I did it. He's like, are you covering up for somebody? No, it was me. How'd you do it? And then she just makes the hands of strangling.
Which was wild.
Like, dark.
Dark, because she just was like, chill about it.
Yeah, I strangled my daughter. But the entire time, I'm like looking at the she said, the translator's translating, and she said, yeah, she was causing problems. She was bad for the house, and I killed her. Also, the father had mentioned that he beat her when she came home late or was looking like a whore.
Yeah.
And
as you do.
And it was really sad for the interpreter because, like, the mom is talking and she's translating, and then she says something, and then the translator kind of pauses. And so it was like, what'd she say? It's like, she said she wished she did what other women did in her village and drowned her when she was born. And I was like, and I just felt like the interpreter's like, I was just at lunch and got a call.
I've heard that before. I've heard that. I'm going to say story or tale about, like, that's actually happened in China because of the rule of, like, oh, if you have a daughter, like, they found, like, babies drowned. Like, I don't know how true that story is. I've heard that story since I was little, like, my whole life. So, yeah.
And it was also, she also mentioned something that just kind of adds some flavor to it, and that's no pun intended, but adds flavor to it because she said, like, we came over, the restaurant failed, he needed
MSG?
To work. He needed to work two jobs, and she's just making life harder for the rest of us. And I was like, that's just it's another one of your kids. But it's crazy. It was a crazy story that I think was supposed to parallel what's happening with James Killick.
For sure, because a little dad will do you.
because doesn't the dad help bury the daughter?
Yeah, what happened was the mom killed her, and then the husband said, I'll take care of it, just make sure everybody's asleep. And he went out in the middle of the night and buried her somewhere.
Because then at the end, they don't charge him with anything because they don't want to break up the family, and he's working two jobs, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
So they reach out to Eddie Gibson.
Yeah, so...
Because Eddie Gibson, excuse me.
Clark Jr. is really broken up about this, and Sipowicz is like, there's nothing you can do. He's kind of cold about it. He's like, nothing you can do.
Well, you kind of have to be, because I think Sipowicz knows, like, what he even says is, like, what are you going to take him home?
Yeah.
And so Sipowicz is like, you kind of have to be in those situations. You just have to be cold and, like, let the system figure it out, which doesn't help. But then he does go, oh, I know Eddie Gibson's kids are foster kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll talk to him and we'll see maybe he knows people.
Yeah, it also is awkward because he's like, you know, Eddie Gibson's sons were foster kids. Maybe he knows somebody. And then Clark's like, will you make a call? He's like, if it stops you from moping.
Yeah. it was like, way to help out a guy who cares about something. Like, fuck.
They bring in Eddie, and Eddie immediately assumes this is just a ploy to get him to take the kid, which is very funny. This is one of the few times I was like, you know what, Eddie? You are funny. I'm okay with you. Working with you, I want to rip your head off. But, like, this shit where he clearly is like, well, what, you want me to feel bad about this kid, so I take him in?
No.
You tell me. Because Clark basically says he's going to end up in the hospital or in a straitjacket.
And one of the lines he says that's kind of funny to me is, like, I don't even know if I can take him. What's his wife's name?
Oh, I don't remember.
Marie?
Marie is meta boy.
That's true. Jenny keeps the house. It's her. She keeps it. It's like, that's such an old-timey, like, thing to say. And, like, I don't know if I laughed at that. Like, that's just an old white man thing.
And they get a call halfway through, and because John tells Sipowicz, it's like, it's Eddie Gibson. And he picks up the phone. He's like, Eddie, okay, that's fine. But you know nobody asked you to do this. And he said, okay, we'll meet you then. And Eddie has, like, a date with Killick. He's like...
Yeah, they're going to go have pizza.
Bring the kid for pizza. And Clark Jr.'s like, what if he says no? And he's like, the kid's back where he started. He's like, no, he's, like, five steps back from where he started.
No, he's not. That I didn't understand.
It's because you're dangling a carrot in front of him.
But what does James want, though?
like, this is the process of trying to find a foster parent.
Yeah.
No foster parent's just going to be like, oh, you have a kid you want me to take? Yeah, send them over.
Send the kids.
Like, let's have a conversation. I've been doing this a lot longer than Andy and fucking
Junior.
So let me talk to this kid and see if he's safe to bring into my house. Shit like that. Like,
so they.
But yeah, and then so James also jumps the gun and packs his bags because when they pick him up,
yeah,
he's ready to like leave, and Clark starts to freak out because. He even says, like, yo, it's just like a meet and greet, kind of.
And he says, like, well, what if you don't like him? And he's like, anything's better than this.
Which I get. I honestly get that response.
Him staying in the apartment that he used to keep with his mom alone is better than where he is.
Yeah, and he probably could take care of himself. Like, that's the other thing, is he probably could cook and clean for himself and take better care of himself by alone than when his mom was around. So,
because he's taking care of two people instead of just himself.
Yeah, and he's not getting molested.
So,
there's that like big thing.
Well, it's
he's able to clean the kitchen without his mom grabbing his dick. You know, there's that fun fucking thing he gets to do. You feel me?
No, I'm not James Killick's mom. No, it's also fucked up what they do to Eddie because they're like, look, we found a kid. He was being molested by his mom. He's now in a youth facility getting beat up every day.
Yeah, shit kicked out of him, yeah.
And he's going crazy. And he's like, I'm supposed to just go home now? Huh? Like, yeah. You tell me about this kid. You know I take foster kids. And so they go to the end of the episode is they're at the pizza dinner. And hilariously, the kid is trying so hard in this job interview. And the first couple questions are duds.
Yeah, it doesn't start off well.
Where it's like, you like football? Yeah, I like football. Who's your favorite player? He's like, I guess I don't really watch it that much. And then Junior's like, he's an avid gamer. He's like, oh, you like Pong?
Yeah.
I hate it. I made too much noise.
I hated the noise it made, which was kind of like an old man thing to say.
And then it's quiet. And then the kid is like, I can cook. I can make food. Well, he doesn't say I'm going to make food. He's like, I can cook. And he's like, what do you like to make? And he's like, mac and cheese, spaghetti, ramen. And I was like, those are the three things I make. And Eddie's like, all of my top five. And then they start talking about food. They talk about a fucking sandwich maker. And then Eddie basically just goes, okay, so when you're in my house, here are the rules. He also does a funny thing that like they did in the Big Lebowski, where earlier in the episode, Eddie says, like, I just care about kids. And Sipwood says, that's because you're a fine American. And then Eddie says it about James.
Yeah, yeah.
Where Eddie's like, that's because you're a fine American. And I was like, that's kind of clever. I like that.
Yeah.
But they found him a home. That's cool. We got to get back to the rape story.
Oh, yeah. We got to finish that one off.
So they bring in the guy who they pick up, and he's trying to sneak into his own apartment.
Because he's afraid that his cousin will be there to beat his ass. That's what he says.
And they go, well, yeah, you only raped his fiance. And I love this dude's acting because he's like, whoa,
yeah.
Hold the fucking phone. What are you talking about? And she's like, well, you raped her. He's like, no, I didn't. I've been seeing her for weeks.
Yeah.
In secret.
Hooking up secretly, yeah. She called me, is what he says. Check the records.
Check the phone records.
Yeah. So they talk to her.
They go back to her. And I do love that, because, and I'm not saying they shouldn't, but they go hard at him because they believe he's a rapist.
Yeah, and I mean, it's easy to say, like, what are you talking about? She invited me over.
And they say, well, the phone records don't mean anything. It's your cousin. He could have been calling you. How do we know?
Watch football.
And he's like, look, talk to her. This is crazy. I did not rape her. We've been seeing each other secretly. And we're not telling him because have you seen that guy? I watched him kill a cat. Very, yeah, very Dennis Reynolds.
Yeah. Very Dennis Reynolds.
Did I kill a bird? Yes. I was testing the tensile strength of their neck. Did I try on a second bird? Yes. And there was a third. Like, so they bring her in, and I guess trigger warning, They get her to admit that she made a false report of being raped.
Why is that a trigger warning?
Because false rape, accusations are a... It's a big point of, like, men's rights advocates and, like, real big assholes to say, like, oh, is it rape? Because there's false allegations and, oh, my gosh, you're going to ruin his reputation. And it's not even true. Mm. All I will say is the way this woman so casually just walks it down to, okay, so I falsely accused him of rape. Was like, fuck you. That's unbelievable.
Okay, Andrew Tate.
But you know what? You know what I'm talking about.
Okay, Fresh and Fit.
I don't even know what that is.
This is like a show with like two misogynistic asshole guys who like yell at only fan girls and call them.
Oh,
like,
I think I know what this is. I think I've seen clips of this.
And shit. Yeah.
And there was like, what are these fucking tool bags doing? But.
It's funny because, like, the girls on OnlyFans can't sell themselves, but they can bring those girls on their show and exploit them on their show for money. It's okay to do that, mm-hmm. but it's not okay for them to do it on their own. They're just dumbass hoes who don't know anything. But I'm a dumbass who just brings them on to yell at them and belittle them and then pay other dudes to watch me do it. That's okay. That makes me a man. That's all.
Yeah, they're assholes. Let's start a beef with them. Maybe we'll get views.
He's not. They're just dummies. Andrew Tate's an idiot too.
But when they get her to admit that it was a false report, it's so like, well, what's the big deal? And it's like, obviously, it's a big fucking deal. We went after this guy.
Yeah.
We wasted a lot of man hours. When it's clearly a cheating issue. Like, you turned an episode of Cheaters into several hours of us working and potentially hurting someone who didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
So they resolved to charge her with filing a false police report, even though Haywood says her defense attorney is going to say that she did it out of fear for her life.
Yeah.
They said, okay. Run it. Later in the episode, her fiance shows up, and this dude was just looking for an excuse to hit women, because the second he popped off, he hit two women right in the face. He knocks Rita Ortiz out completely. He slaps Connie to the floor.
I thought he pushed them. I didn't think he swung at them. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he swung.
I thought he just pushed them down.
Sipowicz and Junior are trying to bring this dude down. He's super huge, and he's just knocking over the furniture and blowing through stuff. John, the PAA, gets up and just takes off to get help. And Tony tries to come around to help out, but the guy drops a bookshelf in between him, so he does like this kind of like, ah, rats, and then runs around the other way to get to him. And my favorite part is when Junior just starts kidney punching this dude.
Yeah, pretty hard, too.
Like really hard. Where he's just like, gah,
he's like pulling back and hitting him pretty hard.
And it takes Connie hitting him with a extinguisher to bring the dude down twice. And then, because that happens, we get a visit from Kyle's new favorite character, Captain Riker.
It's Fraker. Riker.
No, not Riker is...
Riker's Island.
No, Riker is also a Star Trek Commander Riker.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this the nerd podcast?
We're talking about NYPD Blue.
Is this the...
We've talked about every episode for eight and a half seasons.
Is this the gay guy podcast?
Hey, that's what the last thing we need to talk about is. Anyway, so what do you think about Fraker? Huh? He comes in and says...
Horrible. The whole thing's horrible. It's overacting from jump. He sits down with his face and he's screaming at him like, "Well, you need to use a fire extinguisher on the guy."
He says, "You beat him for nothing."
You beat him for nothing. He's over in there and his face is all fucked up. We got to do reconstructive surgery.
He didn't say that. No, he just said he has like 30 stitches.
It just wasn't. It's not good. It's not a good character. The character could be good if the guy knew how to like deliver it better. Stop being like over. Yeah, you have to be calmer and not like in your face.
I said it last episode. He's Dragnet meets New York accent, where he's like, I happened to see him before he going into surgery. He said you beat him for nothing. And he's like, he had 30 stitches in his head. And he's like, yeah, well, look what he did to us, and points to the room. And he says,
he kind of has a point. He destroyed the room, you know. He didn't fuck it up, but yeah.
He also could just say, the dude hit two officers who were women.
Well, I mean, the women part doesn't even matter. Like, it's supposed to be,
we're equal. You're all equal when you put on the badge.
Kyle.
You're equal if you put on the badge. That's all I'm saying.
My point is,
you're equal if you put on any badge. That's all I'm saying.
He clearly.
Firefighting, police officering, military, you're all equal. You all have to be able to do the same exact job.
We'll get you to your men's rights meeting, but here's my
point. One that had the men's right fucking disclaimer for the guys, for all those people who've been falsely acclaimed.
No,
rape,
I'm not.
I don't think that list is large.
No. I'm not. It's not a trigger warning for them. It's a trigger warning because saying, like, when you keep perpetuating the idea of false rape reports, it's giving them more credence. Like, this actually happens that much, which is not true.
I don't think it needs a trigger warning.
So the whole point of that is Fraker's just like, he says he beat him for nothing. Tony's like, look around, talk to every one of these cops, and read the reports. This was clean. Everything's fine.
I will read the reports. I will look into it.
He also says, I want you to put a specific form on my desk by like 8 a.m. tomorrow. And it's like, what the fuck is your deal? Like, what, nothing happened here that like requires this level of intensity. And then after that, Haywood is talking to them where they bring up, we're not going to charge the husband. And she goes, so let me get this straight. We're not going to charge a husband who disposed of his daughter's body, but we are going to charge a woman who made a false rape allegation to potentially save her own life. And then Tony Rodriguez is like, you see this? This is her result of us dicking us around all day. Because she also called her fiance and said, they don't believe me, it was rape, and they're charging me.
Yeah, she did lie about that. She did make it worse. That's what got them all fired up.
So, and it's like, holy shit, like, yeah, you deserve, because now her actions have led to assaulting police officers, basically ruining the furniture inside their place of work. There is a very funny moment that I think is just a funny character moment. Sipowicz's frog pencil case was broken. And Medavoy's like, Andy, your pencil case broke. And Junior says, burial at sea. And he says, a little super glue, and she'll be good as new. And he's like, she? And Medavoy just goes, he has had it for a while. And I was like, that's funny. That's just funny.
It was a little funny character quirk about him.
That's just good shit.
Frog pencil.
So the other thing, we meet John's sister coming in from Boston. John the PA. And John's sister from Boston takes him into the room and says, John, our father is dying. And he says, that's very unfortunate. I hope he gets better. And this is where we find out John, the PAA, does not speak to his father. And they have not spoken in quite some time.
Yeah, they don't really get along, yeah.
And I think this scene is very good because it's a great example of family members not seeing each other's side of it, where one of the children is like, I'm not going to talk to a father who literally hates who I am. Don't you understand why that's important to me? Don't you understand why I do that? And then she's like, but he's dying, though. And he's like, did he ask to see me?
Well, I mean, I get what you're trying to say, but then like Sipowicz kind of basically says the same thing to him later on,
but in a different way.
In a different way, yeah. He goes like, "Oh, I get it." Because Sipowicz then basically, after that happens, John mopes around all day,
and Sipowicz notices.
And Sipowicz notices, so he pulls him in at one point and goes like, "Hey, like let's talk." He's like, "What's wrong?" He's like, "Nothing." He's like, "Your sister comes by," and then ever since then, you've basically been acting like a little bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's going on? And he goes, "Oh, it's my father." He goes, "Is it about your boyfriend?" And John just goes, "No, it's about my father. He's dying." And then Sipowicz goes, "And you're not running over there right now? You're not using lost time?" And he goes, "No, we don't see." Basically says, "We don't see eye to eye. We don't get along." And then he basically tells the story about how he wishes he had more time with his son before his son passed.
And he also said... Yeah. His son is the one that reached out because he thought my son never wants to see me again. Yeah. And he's so glad that he reached out. And he then also said a very good line, which is what I was looking for and didn't find. Guys like us, our generation, we got our views and that's the way it is. In talking about how his dad has a problem with him being gay. And he said, "I understand that, but if you were my son, I would want you to come see me."
Yeah.
And I would let that go.
Yeah. Especially if you knew I was dying. Yeah.
What we find out is John's dad is a prick and nothing like Sipowicz because...
I found this scene weird.
Yeah, it's really fucking weird.
Like, why does he... Why did... He went from like, "Hey, Dad, how are you?" to like, "I'm good, how are you?" "Good, it's really good to see you." "Yeah, it's good to see you. Are you going to throw the fact that you're gay in my face?"
Yeah.
"Dad, if you can't understand that I'm gay, then I don't think I can be in the room with you." "No, it's fine. Just don't throw you being gay in my face." "But, Dad, don't you understand that's who I am? So I'm not throwing it in your face. That's just who I am as a person." "No, you're throwing your gay in my face." And then they stop talking to each other. That's the way I took that conversation.
So that conversation.
For dumb people, that's the way I took it. And he was just like, what happened? Why is this dad, like, why does the dad care so much that John's gay at this moment? Like, right on these, in this moment, does he just, like, hug him and be like, "Thanks for coming"?
With the oxygen in and the EKG going.
And the, like, barely being able to breathe.
What the fuck is making you think this is the time to talk about this?
Yeah.
Like, I really honestly, weird. Like, half of it has to be that they didn't have a lot of time for the scene.
Yeah.
That has to be it. But the other thing is...
Which is weird because you're basically setting up a storyline that's going to play out over the next couple of episodes, hopefully. Or like an episode. It's more than one episode.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You would think you would establish more
than
just that. But
it, because if it was written a little bit better... I think the writing between him and his sister was way better. And then when you meet the dad, you're like, well, this kind of fell flat.
Yeah.
Because the way it's set up is like, oh, so he's ashamed of his son being gay. He walks in and then he's like, "Hey, Dad, how are you feeling?" And he's like, "Well, you know, I'm managing." I don't even remember what sets him off, but he says like, "Oh, are you going to throw your lifestyle in my face?" And he just says, "Dad, if you don't understand that this is who I am, like, I don't know if we can even have a conversation." And then he says like, "Don't you realize how much this hurt me?" And it's like, have you ever thought about how much it hurts your son? Ever?
Yeah, it was a weird conversation. And it was weird to like have that conversation right then and there after, if you haven't talked for so long. Supposedly they haven't had a conversation. You're dying. Why is it when he walks in, the first thing is like, "Don't throw your lifestyle in my face"? It's like, why are we talking about that
right now?
Right now.
Unless, like, I came in here and flirted with a dude while you're on the deathbed.
Or like dressed in drag. Or like had a dick in my mouth. Like,
what are you talking about?
What's the deal? Like, I don't know.
It also...
I'm not dressed like Mr. Slave from South Park. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he didn't walk in like dressed like that. Like, I don't understand.
And also, he said something like, "Don't you realize how much it embarrassed me?" Because at one point he's like, "I understand that like you're ashamed of me." He's like, "No, you're ashamed of me. Do you realize how much you embarrassed me?" And it was like, dude, embarrassed you how? What, were you at the country club and they were like, oh, so your son's gay and that made you feel bad? Like, what the fuck?
That ties into the quote you said about Andy and them just being, we have our ways and that's that. Like, it's just an old school thing. Finding out your son's gay is your only son is gay is embarrassing because he's not manly, you know? Just that shit.
And it was kind of, and it was also crazy how John just, like, leaves. He just escapes.
Yeah, he just walks out.
He just runs. And it was so weird because I felt like he's doing a good job, but the scene itself was doing a bad job.
He was fine. It was his dad that was bad. His dad, so like he was kind of going off of a dud. Like it just was a weird overall situation. Yeah. Yeah.
And it is kind of a bummer because it's like, oh, we're finally getting some more stuff about John, and then it's like, what is this? It's like this lame ass dude being a dickhead. Like, this is what we're giving John.
It did help you realize why he doesn't talk to his dad.
Yeah, holy shit.
Every time you talk to your parent, he or she jumped right into like just yelling at you about the one thing you were. I'd be like, yeah, I could see why you don't talk to him. Like, even if because he's dying. So, yeah.
You got anything else to say about this episode?
No, this episode was actually, was decent, I feel like. I think there were some things that were whack, like the conversation with John's dad was a weird
whack
thing.
That was a good way to describe it.
But whack. Other than that, it was good. I think it was a decent episode. It had, like, it was weird. It had, like, some weird topics. Yeah. Maybe some, like, stereotypes about Chinese culture that may not be true.
Fucking A.
But it was an interesting story. So, yeah.
It was also, I feel like everybody in the main storylines were doing a good job playing their characters in terms of that family. I do think that the guy who was falsely accused did a good job, but I don't know if the woman did or her fiance. The fiance was just like, I'm a dumbass, violent asshole. That's just who I am.
He was just a roid head. That's about it.
But that last, and it kind of ends on that with John, and you're just like,
yeah, the abrupt him just walking out, being like, I'm not doing it.
Yeah. It didn't end well with John. But we also have more Fraker coming down the pike. You better believe it.
I guess, whatever.
Kyle really doesn't like him. But yeah, we have more Fraker. We're going to have more of John and his family. And, you know, we didn't talk, I don't think it touches on this episode at all, like any of the Connie and Sipowicz stuff.
Well, who cares, dude, at this point?
You know that we have 3.5 more seasons to go, right?
I know. I know.
I think by the time, I think when we get to season 12, you're just going to be actually asleep. Or just like, whatever.
Well, we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. Thank you for listening to this episode of NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show wherever you're listening to it. It's how people see it in the algorithm. And more importantly, they might check out the best show ever, NYPD Blue. If you just need more NYPD Blue in your life, there's a couple of books out there. There's True Blue, written about the first couple seasons by creators and consultants. There is What Would Sipowicz Do?, a collection of articles about the show. There is Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. That's on Amazon for 99 cents. And then there are two stories by Max Allen Cullen's Blue Bloods and Blue Beginnings that take place within the world of NYPD Blue. If you find them for a decent price, they're not a bad read. Also, we are on Instagram at Asher Brothers Podcast, mostly just announcing when episodes come out, which is usually every other Tuesday. We are not on X or Twitter or Threads or Blue Sky or any of that nonsense. We're barely there. We have no digital footprint at all. And you want to know why? Because we're just here to talk about the best show ever, NYPD Blue. Be kind to yourself, be kind to each other, and peace.